Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We've known for years that Medicare and Medicaid are headed for the fiscal deep end. Now, in the middle of a raging budget battle, Wisconsin Republican Paul Ryan has thrown down the gauntlet and proposed revolutionary changes to the way we, in the U.S., help our elderly and our poor, help ourselves get medical care. His proposal is not a tweak. It would eventually affect every American intimately, perhaps profoundly. This hour on Point, fixing or breaking Medicare and Medicaid. We will talk in a moment to two of the nation's eminent healthcare experts. Joining me first for the details from Washington is Matthew DeBias. He's healthcare correspondent for the National Journal. He's been covering American healthcare for a long time. Matt, thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me, Tom.
We're going to dive in here, but tell us, let's start with Medicare in the most direct terms. What's the change that Paul Ryan is proposing?
Well, I think your setup had it exactly right. You know, this is a fix-it-or-break-it moment, and I think how you view it really kind of decides which side of the aisle you land on politically. Now, what he's proposing for Medicare is a fundamental restructuring of the program. It's a privatized version of Medicare. This would, starting in 2022, this would mean that seniors would purchase there are health insurance coverage from the private markets. You know, this is an idea that's been around for a while, has failed to gain traction, but it essentially privatizes the Medicare program. Seniors would be required to buy from private health insurance companies, Aetna, United Health, those groups.
Mm-hmm. And the government would give them premium support. Paul Ryan doesn't like to call it a voucher, but a kind of voucher to help them pay for that private insurance.
Right. Ryan would say, don't call it a voucher. This is premium support. So this means that the federal government, to help defray the costs of buying that health insurance coverage, will kick in a certain amount of money. Now, in 2022, that dollar amount is projected to be about $8,000. It would go up with the rate of the consumer index plus a little more. So in the out years, it would be a little bit more. But the argument, federal actuaries who have looked at this program say that it will still require, it won't be enough to make a dent in the healthcare spending that seniors of that age are projected to actually pay out of pocket.
Now, so here we are. It's privatized. Is it universal, or it's sort of up to you, dear senior, whether or not you go out and try and buy insurance?
It's still unclear. My reading on this is that the Medicare program, as we know it, the kind of traditional universal coverage for those 65 and older disappears. Now, this is. I don't know if the requirement is there for seniors, but I would imagine that it would have to be, just in order to spread the risk out among the insurers.
Well, I really don't know about that. Republicans have objected so vociferously to the requirement of universal coverage in President Obama's health care reform. We'll look more at that. Paul Ryan's goal here is fiscal. He says he'll save, $1 trillion or more with this plan?
Overall, his budget, he wants to save about $3.5 trillion, and like you said, the large share of that, the lion's share of that, is on Medicare and Medicaid. About one-third of those savings are projected from those federal health programs.
Now, does this mean that seniors in the future would be paying for more of their own health care, even with this premium support, insurance premium or voucher from the government?
Absolutely. And that is, make no mistake, this is by design. And the thinking behind this, Tom, has actually been around for a while. You've seen it. It's embedded in other types of healthcare programs, most notably health savings accounts. And that is, as consumers, in this case, as seniors, pay more out of their own pockets for healthcare, this will in turn make them more judicious in what they buy. This in turn makes them a better consumer, a better shopper of healthcare. And that idea kind of projects out to the industry where you expect the insurance companies to now compete for the consumer's dollar, in this case, again, the senior's dollar. And that idea is that they will fundamentally become more competitive, which will in turn drive down costs and, in theory, raise the quality that they offer. Consumers want to pay the least amount of money for the highest quality if possible. Now, that's the theory. Whether or not that works, healthcare, as we all know, is a very different market than, say, purchasing televisions or purchasing consumer electronics.
Yeah, we'll look at that assumption in this hour. I mean, we've got a lot of private insurance in this country right now,
right,
and costs have continued to go through the roof. What's the fiscal problem that Ryan's trying to address? People will debate whether or not it's the right way, but what's the Medicare fiscal problem that he's trying to do something about here?
You know, it's interesting. It's almost, you can say that Medicare is almost too generous in terms as it is as a payer of healthcare services. It is almost universal in what it will cover. And seniors have grown to like this program. So, you know, you don't really have to look much farther than, I think it was last week's decision on Provenge, the cancer drug that Medicare decided to cover. This is a $93,000 drug, and this is something that Medicare will pay for now for seniors. So one of the problems is that Medicare is a very generous, it covers seniors in a very generous way.
His argument is it breaks the bank in this country if we don't figure something out, some kind of change out here.
That's his argument. That's the argument of many people, and I think on paper that is absolutely right.
But the Obama health care reforms that were passed last year, those include measures that were supposed to experiment in ways of controlling health care costs. Would those be included in Paul Ryan's plan, those efforts to not just shift cost but control cost?
Those would be. And you know,
they
idea
would.
Ryan zeroes out a big chunk of the health care law. You know, that's his goal. But there are those proposals that really kind of redistribute the payment within Medicare that will understandably kind of stay intact under the proposal.
We'll look at that as well. Let's turn to Medicaid. This is for the poor,
right?
Not seniors. And what's he proposing there?
Well, he wants to turn Medicaid into what is known as a block grant. And this is essentially, in the simplest terms, the federal government will give state governors a lump sum of money and essentially say, here you go, governor, do as you will with the program.
Which means there's this amount of money and no more. Is the presumption then that that states would come up with what was required above and beyond that amount of federal support to cover the poor, or maybe they just wouldn't cover the poor in the same way?
That's the interesting fulcrum there when it comes to the state's decisions. Now I think state governors, there are 29 Republican state governors, are going to come out in favor of the block grant proposal. It will, as the Congressional Budget Office has projected, this will put more of the onus on states, and certainly it could raise the cost of health care for states, you know, especially if there is an economic downturn that we've seen, you know, just recently. What the state governors were able to do is get sort of a lifeline from the federal government, and that lifeline wouldn't be there under the block grant system. Now, governors will tell you this. They will say that the trade-off is in the ability to have much more flexibility in designing their own Medicaid program. Now, whether that flexibility means, as some would think, that they would limit enrollment or cut enrollment so that they actually you see Medicaid beneficiaries get cut off from the rolls, which is a way to save money, or whether they try to tailor their program in other ways. Maybe it's reducing the reimbursement that Medicaid pays to providers, that's hospitals and physicians. But governors will back this proposal. Republican governors will back this proposal because they want that flexibility in the Medicaid program.
Both of these measures sort of remind me, Matt, of the move in retirement arena to go to defined benefits
right.
A decade and two ago now. You know, instead of sort of it's all covered, it's like, well, we'll cover this much and then you're on your own.
Right. Right. So the switch over to Medicare, you know, this is Medicare, as we know, it is a defined benefit. Seniors know what they're getting when they go into the program. They, by the way, by and large, like what they're getting in the program. That's going to be a politically contentious point moving forward. But Ryan envisions this now as a defined contribution, and that defined contribution is the premium support that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
You know, this is the fixed dollar amount that would I shouldn't say fixed, but this is the dollar amount that will go towards, again, kind of defraying those high costs of
healthcare. Let's look at the politics here. First off, do the Democrats in total have an answer to the fiscal problem on Medicare, Medicaid? And what about the Ryan proposal itself? Are there, will it move? Can it move? Can it become the law of the land in the foreseeable future?
Right. Well, you know, I think if you ask Democrats, they will say, we do have that answer. You just saw it in the Affordable Care Act. This is a health reform law that just turned a year old earlier this month. Will they counter Ryan specifically? You know, I don't know. Politically, they don't really have to. I think this is a calculated chance that Democrats are willing to take. You know, they are, Paul Ryan and the Republicans. Now, just as preamble to this, I should say that the budget that Paul Ryan proposed cleared its first hurdle last night. It passed out of the budget committee that Ryan chairs on a straight party line vote, 22-16. Party line, I think, is going to be the operative word moving forward here. Now, Democrats, you know, I can't envision a time when a Democrat will actually vote for this proposal. I think it's more of a risk now for Republicans, and I would not be surprised to see a few Republicans kind of side with the Democrats on this when it comes down to actually doing a vote. So politically, the numbers are there for Republicans. You know, this is a package that will pass the House, and then it will not quite transfer over to the dump because that's where the Democrats still have the majority.
Sounds as though this may be right at another piece right at the heart of the 2012 presidential campaign, Senate campaign. Matthew Dobias with the National Journal, thank you very much for laying out the basic pieces here. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
On Tuesday, the Republican chairman of the House Budget Committee, Paul Ryan, said the way to bring down the costs of Medicare, Medicaid, is of covering the medical bills of the country is the time-honored way, privatization, competition.
It gives consumers, seniors, choice. It has insurers competing against each other for their business. We want to harness the power of patient choice, of competition.
In Medicaid, it's basically a block grant going to the states. Here's how Paul Ryan spoke of it.
This budget proposes an end to the one-size-fits-all approach. It converts Medicaid into a block grant and cuts the excessive federal strings, freeing states to design programs that work best for their residents. Giving states more flexibility will allow them to create a range of options that will give Medicaid patients access to better care.
There's the message. A big, big change in both these programs on the table now. Joining us now from Washington is Gail Walensky. She's a senior fellow at Project Hope. It's an international health education foundation. She's on the board of directors of Geisinger Health Systems, one of the top national health delivery systems. She ran Medicare and Medicaid under President George H.W. Bush and was an advisor to John McCain's 2008 presidential campaign. Gail Walensky, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Nice to be here.
And with us as well today, Jonathan Oberlander joins us from Gainesville, Florida. He's professor of social medicine and health policy and management at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, author of The Political Life of Medicare. Jonathan Oberlander, welcome to you as well.
Thanks so much.
Jonathan, let me come first to you. What do you see on the table here? Pros, cons? What's your basic take on what Americans are being offered?
I've been studying health policy for about 25 years, and I was stunned when I read this proposal. I really believe this is the worst health plan I have seen in my 25 years in the field. I think it is reckless policy. I think it is politically unworkable, and frankly, I think it's morally repugnant. It would absolutely devastate Medicaid and erode the almost 50-year promise that Medicare has had for our seniors.
Why reckless? Paul Ryan says we're on a reckless path right now, that the country will be bankrupted if we don't do something, and here he says is the way to go.
Well, he wants to cut $750 billion over 10 years in Medicaid. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that that would slash federal spending on Medicaid by 50%. That's 50. And we have to remember who's on Medicaid. It's children make up about half of it, pregnant women, the disabled, seniors, people with HIV, AIDS. So what essentially Congressman Ryan is proposing is to take the most vulnerable part of our society and absolutely obliterate their health care coverage. If you look at his proposal for Medicare, this would substantially shift costs to Medicare beneficiaries to the point where they would be paying about two-thirds of the cost themselves.
But what about his fundamental argument that we can't afford to keep doing what we've been doing, that this here you maybe have to be cruel to be kind, otherwise the whole country goes bankrupt?
Well, I would frankly take his argument a little more seriously if in the same budget proposal he was not proposing to extend the Bush tax cuts for upper-income Americans, which is going to cost about $700 billion over 10 years. So on the one hand, he's saying we can't afford to have health insurance for the most vulnerable citizens in our country. On the other hand, he's saying we can't afford to extend tax cuts for the most fortunate citizens. This just does not add up, even as budget policy.
Jonathan, stand by. Gil Wilensky, you've been in the Republican health care camp. What do you see in Paul Ryan's proposal? How does it look to you?
I am much more supportive of his general proposal with regard to Medicare. With regard to Medicaid, there is an attraction in going to a block grant in terms of the additional flexibility. I'm more concerned about what that could mean in the long term, and particularly in terms of the rate of increase and how the block grant is calculated. Let me describe a little bit more about Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, in terms of the financial incentives of the program of Medicare, it's widely regarded that it is perverse. It rewards physicians and institutions for doing more and more complex. It has very little incentive for patients to be actively concerned and participants. And it is the most siloed, fragmented delivery system we have in the United States, Part A that pays for inpatient hospital, Part B that pays for outpatient and physicians, Part D that pays for prescription drugs. It is just incredibly fragmented, siloed, needs serious restructuring. Some pilots will be part of the changes going forward that were just voted in as part of the Affordable Care Act. But there's a long distance between a pilot started in a few places and making it actually part of the national program.
Is turning it over to private insurers the way to do it? Is that the way to bring efficiencies here? I mean, we've got a lot of private insurance right now in this country, and we've had exploding health care costs even with that.
Well, I like to look at Paul Ryan's proposal as basically mimicking the federal employee health care plan. He has envisioned an exchange, some kind of a structured insurance market that will authorize which plans can participate, making sure that there's not discrimination according to age or to health status. Like the federal employees' health care plan, it is envisioned to offer a wide variety of health care plans that will be available with a substantial contribution from the federal government for those who are under 55 now when they enter into Medicare. One of the questions he is raising with this kind of model is whether or not the kind of Medicare spending growth that we have seen, which is basically mimicking health care spending mm-hmm. in the country as a whole, 2.5 percentage points faster than the economy each year on average for the last 40 or 50 years, whether or not that can be driven down by restructuring how Medicare is offered. We've seen in Part D Medicare that outpatient drug benefit spending that is way below what either the CMS or the Congressional Budget Office predicted, in part at least as a result of competition between private plans. You could, in fact, envision a Ryan structure that has a wide variety of private health care plans to also include traditional Medicare on a premium basis. That actually was part of the Republican proposal in the Medicare Modernization Act that starting last year in communities where there was at least 25% Medicare participation in private plans, that you would have this direct competition between private plans and Medicare.
But that's not in
basis.
Paul Ryan's proposal.
Unfortunately, it got pushed out.
I'm just a layman here, but forgive me. Let me ask again. We have a lot of private insurance coverage in this country, and yet the cost of health care have exploded. People are always complaining about the cost of premiums and how much health insurance costs. So he's saying, you know, push it out to private insurers and we'll get more competition, more cost control. But where's the evidence for that? Or why would that work here when it doesn't seem to have worked in the general population yet?
Well, he's not saying that per se. What he is saying is that you need to change how it is offered and what it is offered and how the federal government makes changes. Many of us economists, for example, have thought for a long time one of the problems with regard to how private insurance is offered for the under 65 population is that it primarily comes through employer-sponsored insurance. The tax attributes mean that individuals don't know how much their employers are paying. They don't look at it as their money, although it's part of their compensation package. There's not a lot of push and interest on the part of employees, because they don't view it as their money, in terms of being actively involved in having lower costs. What this really does is to give seniors, eventually, a broader range of choices with an amount of money that sounds like it is expected to be, for people entering the program, about what is predicted to cost now under Medicare, and to give them this wide choice. Now, as I've said, you could actually envision traditional Medicare, which is going to go on for all of those who are now 55 and older anyway. You could have that be one of the offerings in the exchange. They've said,
but it's not there. It's important to point that out. You wish it were, but it's not there.
Well, okay, but this is the first round.
Right.
I mean, this is a basically different vision, and a lot of the specifics that are in the Ryan proposal are the first salvo. And what will be, I think, a very serious discussion going forward. We've talked a lot about the deficit as a result of the recession. Those of us who've been in healthcare for the last several decades have known that we cannot continue healthcare spending that's growing at 2.5 percentage points faster than the economy.
So, but
and that's
going to
be
a contradiction.
By the baby boomers.
Yeah, I see that problem. It's a big one. But there's a contradiction I'm hearing. I don't know how to settle. You're saying, Gail, it'll be about the same amount of money in Medicare, but then you're saying we can't afford to go on spending as
no,
Medicare
I'm saying
would.
We're going to start. What I'm saying is that when it starts,
right.
Now, if clearly,
but it's
if
gonna get cranked
you don't
down.
Slow down this, if you don't slow down the spending, well, if you take the attitude that the only way we can have good health care is to continue spending the rate of spending that we've had in the past going forward, then we're cooked financially. I mean, we know we can't sustain this rate of growth in spending. Now, fortunately, we also know that there's so many bad, perverse incentives, both in terms of how providers, physicians, and institutions are paid, what they're rewarded to do, and how consumers are involved in this, that there is very little incentive for them in terms of what they seek. Some of these are very hard programs. This is saying if we reorganize what's offered and how it's offered, we can slow down the growth, but he's starting at where it's expected that we'll be in a decade. But
hold the thought there. I want
to slow it down. Now, whether it's GDP or GDP plus one, I mean, that's another big policy issue.
Well, right now, he's saying inflation rate. And of course, healthcare has been much higher than that. Let me take it to Jonathan for a moment, if I may.
Too
tight,
drastic.
But that's what's in there. Jonathan Oberlander, we cannot continue to see healthcare spending increase at this rate. We've got to do something. And, you know, Gail's willing to sort of get in here and work with this approach. Why not, Jonathan?
Well, first of all, the Ryan proposal is not going to expand choices. The way that Medicare works right now, beneficiaries can choose from the traditional program or a private insurance alternative. What the Ryan proposal would do is take away traditional Medicare as an option. So it actually, in a very important way, would restrict the choices that Medicare beneficiaries have. I would really encourage all your listeners to go to the Congressional Budget Office website and read their analysis of the Ryan proposal. The Congressional Budget Office is nonpartisan, and as Gail can attest, both parties hate them, depending on the time, which is good proof that they're nonpartisan. And they looked at the Ryan proposal, and what they said is that traditional Medicare, given all the limitations that it has, is cheaper than private insurance. It's cheaper by about 11% today, and by 2030, they estimate it will be 30% less expensive than private insurance. So it's not just that Congressman Ryan wants to shift the burden of rising health care costs to seniors and disabled beneficiaries of Medicare, which he does. It's that his proposal would actually exacerbate health care spending. It would increase health care spending by going from a less expensive government option to a more expensive private option.
Is there a Democratic option then to deal with the fiscal problems that this is one path, this is Paul Ryan's path of getting at them? Would President Obama's reforms begin to do this, or are the Democrats missing at this point from that conversation, Jonathan?
Well, when you talk about reducing the deficit, there's fiscal policy and tax policy. And in terms of the long-term deficit, I agree with Gail. When you're talking about controlling long-term deficit growth in the United States, it really is about health care spending. But Congressman Ryan wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act, which actually, according to the Congressional Budget Office, does quite a bit to control health care spending in the long run. So I think what the Obama administration would say is that we have, as part of the Affordable Care Act, these experiments in delivery system reform to get that more integrated care that Gail was alluding to, experiments in payment reform. And we want to scale those up and see how those work. Now, you can be skeptical, and certainly I am, about whether those are going to work in the short term. But I really think if you're going to give private insurers an exclusive monopoly on Medicare, which is what Congressman Ryan is talking about, you're taking a big step back in cost control. And in addition, he wants to repeal one of the more significant cost control instruments that was part of that law for Medicare, which was the Independent Payment Advisory Board, which was going to have the ability to recommend to Congress changes in Medicare payment.
Would the exchange, the board overseeing this new exchange of private companies have the same kind of power? Jonathan, could it provide the same kind of role by looking at the kind of policies that the government will offer premium support for?
We don't know the details. He says in his proposal that he would give Medicare beneficiaries a list of options, which I don't think is going to be tremendous consolation. And there's sort of a disconnect. Gail was talking about people being consumers. Let's think about the Medicare population here for a second. There are many very sophisticated consumers of medical care in the Medicare population. But about 30% of the Medicare population has cognitive limitations. And the idea that they're going to go around and shop among lots and lots of health care plans to make exactly the right choice, I think really is a fantasy. So this is, at the end of the day, this proposal for Medicare, in my view, is not about budget savings. It's really about ideology, and an ideology that Congressman Ryan has, that privatization is the answer.
Gail Wilensky, is there a danger that we go from a path where, you know, maybe the government goes broke to a path where millions of seniors go broke, just when they're maybe not so, you know, at the top of their game when it comes to handling all this stuff, Gail?
Well, I think it's why the argument ought to be about whether the change structure, a federal employees benefit model structure, is a better path. We do have actually a lot of experience about and a lot of knowledge about what that generally looks like, as opposed to having the traditional administered pricing siloed program that we see in traditional Medicare. There are, as I've indicated, a number of changes that before I would personally support the specifics that I would want to see that would put in some safeguards to make sure that at whatever payment level we are saying on average ought to be provided in terms of supporting the premiums would buy, for example, at least one plan in an area and that there would be available for that. He's talked about having premiums that are support that are as higher for older people and sicker people, and lower for high-income individuals. We don't know, you know, what that means. So there are a lot of issues, if you wanted to think about this as a strategy, that are important policy considerations. But it's a question about whether the path that traditional Medicare has been on with the kinds of changes we see is likely to really make it into the next generation or the generation after. The traditional Medicare program has been wonderful providing access to seniors. For me as an economist, it has been financially dysfunctional because the incentives are so completely perverse.
Gail, Jonathan, we've got lots of callers. Let me turn to Brian in Moline, Illinois. Brian, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Pretty well. What do you see?
The thing I don't understand that no one seems to bring up is private health care are businesses and corporations that are just that, businesses and corporations. They're in the business of making money. That's it. They're all about making money.
Yeah.
The more money they can make, the better. The problem is with health care, they have a commodity that you must have or you die. You know, you have to have operations and things. You have to have them. So when you have a commodity that you have to have, what incentive do they have to make it cheaper? They have none. They can charge you as much as they want and continue to charge. I think the breaking point is when more people die, that the government steps in and forces them. I just don't understand how anyone can think giving businesses the opportunity to charge even more, that's exactly what they're going to do.
Brian, let us look at it. I appreciate your call from Moline. Jonathan Oberlander, I'll come first to you. What about this question? I mean, a lot of the, you know, we've heard for years that part of the problem with our current healthcare system is how much money goes to profits and everything else in the private insurance realm. Is there some mechanism you see in Paul Ryan's plan that would keep, you know, that there's the profit part of this from driving up healthcare instead of driving it down?
Well, profits get a lot of attention. If you look at insurance company profits, though, they really are a modest share of the total national healthcare spending. But I think in line with the caller's point, it's worth remembering why the federal government enacted Medicare in 1965. And it's because private insurance plans failed the elderly. We did not have a system where private insurance plans reliably wanted to cover very sick, expensive people.
Most elderly weren't covered back in the day, in the
right.
early 60s.
There's a very high uninsurance rate, and what Congressman Ryan is talking about doing in Medicare is going back to exclusive reliance on private insurance. Now, in theory, you can design a competitive system that has incentives where private insurers will compete for people and won't shun sick people, but that's in theory. The reality is it's very hard to make that system work. Medicare has had private plans operating in it really since the early 1970s, and the government has lost money on those plans. So the theory is just not supported by the reality in this case.
Let's go to Joel in Northampton, Massachusetts. Joel, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. I'm a physician and psychiatrist over here.
Okay.
And of all the insurance plans, the patients, compared to all the others, prefer Medicare. There are no complaints from the patients, and I have complaints in terms of the fee schedule, but on the whole, it works. So I'm actually interested in going in the opposite direction that Paul Ryan is talking about, and why don't we investigate, as we may be in Vermont with the single-payer system, mm-hmm. hopefully will pass as an alternative, European models, Asian models that have a right to health care built into their system cost much, much less.
Joel, let me ask you, Dr. Joel, Paul Ryan might say, well, of course people don't have complaints because it covers everything and we can't afford that anymore.
But what I'm suggesting is mm-hmm. if you take a look at single-payer models in Europe, the cost is much less and they get better care. There's a fantasy that America provides the best care in the world. That is just incorrect. We have one of the highest infant mortality rates. And with Paul Ryan's plan, with Medicaid, those rates will go up. The infant mortality rates will go up even higher because the children and poor people will benefits will be cut even more.
Yep.
To my mind, this is a very immoral and incorrect plan. I'm suggesting we take a look at other plans that work across the world. We're not that unique.
Go just the opposite way, you say. Joel, I appreciate your call. Gail Walensky, what about it? Why this privatizing way instead of the kind of universal coverage path that our physician calling in says looks better to him?
Well, I think you and the physician that just called in, unless you were sleeping these last couple of years, know that we have had a very loud public, sometimes a discordant discussion about what our future healthcare delivery system should look like. There has not been, even when we had a heavily Democratic Congress with a Democratic president, anything like a substantial majority who support the notion of having government-run, government-completely funded healthcare, as many European countries do. It's as much a political statement about how we want healthcare delivered as it is a financial statement. And we clearly have not wanted to go down that path, even during the discussion 2009-2010. The question, I think, with regard to Medicare and to that first caller that came in is You can offer choices like the Blues not-for-profits, mm-hmm. the Kaisers, the Geisingers, and also the for-profit plans that are put forward by Aetna, United Healthcare, or WellPoint, all the other ones we have around. The idea of the federal employee health care plan is that you have these choices that include not-for-profits, that include integrated delivery systems, that include old-fashioned traditional indemnity type insurance, and the contribution from the government toward buying these is the same, and that people are able to be able to choose what fits them best. As I've indicated, I would personally favor, since mm-hmm. traditional Medicare is going to continue on for a long time, there's no reason we couldn't put that on a premium basis and offer it going forward as well. People who are who are 55 now and over are going to be living a long time, so we are going to have traditional Medicare around for the next 40 years no matter what.
Jonathan Oberlander, Gail Walensky's pointed to the existing Federal Employees Exchange and saying, look, you know, they get coverage there, they're pretty happy with it. Why not something like that for everyone? Do you see that coming in Paul Ryan's plan, Jonathan?
Well, actually, the Affordable Care Act, the health reform law that we passed in 2010, has mm-hmm. something like that for the uninsured. And the irony is that all congressional Republicans oppose that, even though it's the model they supposedly want now in Medicare. The reality of the Federal Employees Health Benefit Plan is that its cost control record is not very good. It had a few good years when managed care was at its apex in the mid-1990s. But if you look at it vis-a-vis Medicare, its cost control record is not particularly strong. And again, Gail has said repeatedly that she would want to keep traditional Medicare as a part of this program. But Gail is not the chair of the Budget Committee. Maybe she should be. I would trust her more than Paul Ryan. But Paul Ryan is the chair of the Budget Committee. And so we're talking about the Ryan proposal, and again, the Ryan proposal would take traditional Medicare away. So it actually, in the name of choice, would shrink choices.
Let's go to Carol in Blanchard, Michigan. Carol, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling with one comment. I agree with the last couple of callers who have been on. We forget to remember that business has one basic goal, that is profit. Government has the goal of providing for the general welfare of the people. And those two are in conflict at the present way that Paul Ryan is proposing this. I've traveled all over the world. I've used the health care in England. I've used it in the Netherlands, Aruba, the Bahama Islands.
Lucky you.
The health care I was provided was excellent and very cheap.
So what about what's being put on the table here? What about the argument Paul Ryan makes that if we have more private health insurance coverage for seniors, we'll get more efficiency, more cost control ultimately?
But Medicare has proven to be very efficient. And remember back when Proposal B came in for the drug, people went nuts trying to figure out what plan to take because the pharmacies divided up those medications so that a person with a particular problem, say heart, couldn't get all of their medications through one program. The company split that up, so it became, so everybody gained money.
We may spend our golden years reading the fine print of health care plans. Maybe that's what it takes. Carol, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here. Columbia, South Carolina, Joe. Joe, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi, what do you think, Joe? Yes.
Well, I find people like Mr. Ryan, his old argument, and Republicans like that, are bogus and disingenuous because it seems to me they just want to dismantle Medicaid and Medicare as we know it. That's what the bottom line goal is.
Dismantle, you see. Well, they do. They explicitly do. They say we can't afford it.
Well, that's not. Well, but they also said we can't afford the public option, and if we would have put that in there, it would have been eventually more affordable for everyone. I think unless the Republicans are willing to put everything on the table because they think that we can cut our way out of our problems, and we can't, then their whole argument is bogus and disingenuous.
Do you have experience of Medicare yourself,
Joe? Yes, sir. I happen to be a blind or a disabled person, and I'm on Medicaid right now, and I use it. And our governor here is making me mad, and I don't know what, because she's trying to cut it also. And you know, I used to get dental care because of it. Now I have to pay for it myself. So there's no doubt it's affected me, too.
Joe, I appreciate your call. Gail Walensky, there's Joe in South Carolina. He's blind. He's used Medicaid. Now, if we go to block grant and, you know, the block grant runs out, is it Sir Joe, blind Joe, going to do?
I think it depends very much on how you fund the block grant. This has been a debate about whether or not giving more flexibility to governors will allow them to have better programs. Medicaid has historically been regarded rather poorly in terms of the health care that's been provided, but we want to make sure that if we have the changes, again, if I were the one that we're putting in the rules, it would be with block grants. We need to have better information on the health status of the people affected. We have lots of rules and regulation in Medicaid. Mm-hmm. We have zero information about the actual health status and health change for the people on Medicaid. I have long thought that we have rules and regulations that look like they're actually going to provide for better care.
Mm-hmm.
There is no information that's ever provided about what happens. We could do better than that, and that ought to, again, be a quid pro quo, in my view, for more flexibility. But your previous caller mentioned Part D, and I don't want to let that pass without bringing up the
prescription
fact
drug
that
coverage.
Indeed, this is the Part D. This is the new drug coverage for mm-hmm. Medicare that was started in 2006,
under President Bush.
In mm-hmm. 2003. And indeed, while there was a lot of question about whether you would even have private plans want to participate, it's turned out there a flood of them have come forward. And the competition among them has resulted in health care spending that is at least 40% below where the Congressional Budget Office, which is indeed impartial, but that doesn't mean it's right, predicted we would be about this time. CMS actuaries, those mm-hmm. that run the Medicare program, were equally wrong. We'll have to see whether we can continue this. It's actually an interesting example about how competition among private plans, when the incentives that are facing the purchasers lead them to care about what this costs, can lead to lower spending. Doesn't mean it would happen everywhere, but it is an example that it can happen.
I want to put that to you, Jonathan. Yes, please.
Part D is a mixed story. It is certainly true that the expenditures under Medicare's prescription drug program were less than forecast by actuaries, although that tells you something, I guess, about actuaries. Part of the reason they were less, actually, is not the competition, but because the enrollment in the plan and the take-up of the subsidies for low-income beneficiaries was lower. It's also worth pointing out that there have been a number of marketing abuses associated with Part D, with insurance plan signing up seniors who didn't understand what they were getting, and, of course, the general state of bewilderment. But I want to come back to the caller's point about Medicaid, because most of the media attention, and, in fact, most of this conversation, has been about Medicare. And mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, I think the congressman's proposal on Medicare is terrible. But we should be candid about what he's proposing on Medicaid. The Congressional Budget Office estimates, again, that he would cut, under his proposal, federal Medicaid spending by 50%. And that would utterly devastate health care coverage. It would shred the health care safety net for the most vulnerable in our country. If something like this actually went into effect, it would be devastating for those populations, and we shouldn't lose that point.
What's the path then? Ideally, we'd like everybody to have great coverage. The argument, Jonathan, you know it, is that we can't afford it, that it's going to eat up, you know, the huge portion of the federal budget. Do you buy that argument? And if you do, what's the alternative to what Paul Ryan's putting on the table?
Well, I thought Matt at the outset of the show did a really good job summarizing the Ryan proposal. I want to take issue with one thing he said. He said that Medicare offers generous coverage, and that's not true. If you look at Medicare benefits and their actuarial value mm-hmm. compared to what other countries' healthcare systems offer or compared to what large employers offer in the United States, the coverage isn't that great. We can afford Medicare, and partly this is a social issue about how important we think it is to maintain that promise from the federal government to senior citizens who have worked their lives.
So but what about the argument that it's just not sustainable? Do you buy that or not? That it costs too much to hold back mortality here?
No, I think we can't sustain Medicare, but we've got to make changes. And people have said we can't sustain Medicare almost since Medicare was passed. And what has happened over time is we've made changes, made reforms. We made them in the early 80s and the late 80s, and we made them in the 1990s. And each time we made those changes, we slowed down the rate of growth in Medicare. It's forgotten in this discussion, but the health reform law actually makes significant reductions in the rate of growth in Medicare, about $450 billion over 10 years. So I think the health care reform law, the Affordable Care Act, is far from perfect. I do think it sets us much more towards that right path of controlling health care spending than what Congressman Ryan proposes, which is really not about controlling health care spending, but just shifting who's going to pay for it to elderly and disabled beneficiaries.
Yeah, we've just got 20 seconds. Can we shift? Is it shifting necessary and cutting necessary? What about control, cost control?
Slowing it down is necessary. What we saw in the Affordable Care Act is the same system, just paying less to physicians, hospitals, home care, nursing homes. There's nothing reform in that. We can't sustain what we've got in its present form. We're going to have to figure out how to get the job done better at a slower rate of growth in spending, or we are cooked.
Well, here's a debate that's going to rage, but there's an opening take on it. Listeners, we will return to it, no doubt, again and again in the years ahead. Gail Wilensky, thank you very much for being with us today. Gail, great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And Jonathan Oberlander, thank you for your time, Jonathan.
Thanks very much.
This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.